I'm Donna.
And I'm Carrie.
And we are Paranormal Chicks.
Episode 391. Apparently Stella got her groove back over there because she is just happy as a lark today.
It's been a good day. It's been a good day.
About time.
Oh my gosh, for real.
We've been fucking dealing with Wednesday items over there for about 3 weeks now. And not the good one.
I know. I know you and I have been working so hard, but Chris has too. And the other day, I stayed at work till like 7:50, and he was coming from another job too. And I was like, do you want to eat together? Like, just have a time. And so we went to our Mexican place, and we were the only ones there, obviously, because it's like at 8:15. And we sat there like zombies, really not even talking, just like kind of eating.
Yeah.
And at that point, we were so hungry that we didn't even eat all of it. So I had leftovers. He had leftovers because.
Well, that's good.
Yeah. But it was just so like, that was the most zombied kind of like thing ever, is hardly any talking. You know me, I love to talk. Did not hardly talk. It was just like, how was your day? Yeah, long, mine too. Yeah. Got home, went to sleep, you know, and I'm like, yeah, I'm feeling good today. Like, I'm energized. Maybe I have got my groove back.
Well, you know what we got to get our groove ready for, though, is this damn cruise. Because, y'all, so we met with them this week, and the schedule is jam-packed. I said, you better pack all your busy bars. That's what we call our abuse bar. Gummies, whatever, because it is going to be a party. There's going to be no rest for us because we're going to be having fun with everybody on that dang cruise.
They have such cute theme nights and the games that they have in store. Oh my God, I'm so ready. I am so freaking ready.
Yeah, just talking to him, I was like, I'm so excited. I said, I don't know how we got invited on this cruise, but I'm so glad we did.
For real.
So if you want to know what we're talking about, where have you been? Just kidding. I hate when people are like, if you know, you know, because I'm like, well, I don't know. So what? But the cruise, it is through this company called IRL, like In Real Life Events, and it is their first crime wave at sea. They do a lot of other like nurse cruises and stuff like that, but this is their first crime wave at sea. So they've got experience with the cruises. They know how to make this happen. It's going to be so much fun. There's 5 other podcasts coming, which is going to be so exciting. So that just to me is like makes it a little bit more intimate too, that it's not like 40 different podcasts, you know?
Right. You get to spend time with each podcaster, which I am going to fangirl out so hard for Scared to Death and Sinisterhood. Oh my goodness.
But then the guys over at Lattice Podcast on the Left, Side Stories, is going to be there. You said Scared to Death, the Housewives of True Crime, True Crime Campfire. You said Sinisterhood, like, and then us. I think that's everybody.
Scared to Death, too.
I thought you'd already said
I did. Oh, okay. Just put them back on there. Scared to Death.
So it's going to be a really great time. I think that there's still some spots available. We're going the first week in November. So head on to crimewaveatsea.com/creep if you want to get in on this, because it is going to be so much fun. I'm going to need to sleep for 3 days, but it's going to be so much fun. Y'all, Donna, how I told y'all, Stella got her groove back over there. She also came in fucking looking like Prince, wearing a goddamn purple disco ball on her shirt. I said, damn, you going to a party?
I think it's made me happy. Maybe dopamine clothing.
That is so you, just a fucking bedazzled shirt, and she's happy as a clam. What other animals are happy? Larks, clams.
A whale?
Happy as a whale isn't a saying.
When I'm finished with the buffet, I feel like that.
Oh my God. Y'all, I just got like the serious perimenopause, like foggy brained whatever. And yesterday I couldn't get a word out to save my damn life. And one of my coworkers said, hey, I don't even know what the hell she asked me. And I was like, I don't know. She said, why did I ask you? Never mind. I was like, you're not wrong. And that came up because I just called the microphone a microwave. So welcome to, I'm just so foggy this week. I don't know what's going on. Oh yeah, I'm getting old.
Feel that. You know what's not getting old though? Hopefully.
What?
Patreon!
Earth.
Well, I was gonna, yeah. I can't do that. Or you'd be like, you took my line. But if it's just Patreon.
Well, thank you so much. Mandy K from Arizona.
Kim H from Florida.
Carrie D, spelled the same way as me. But we don't know where you're from, Carrie. So send us in your address.
Is it actually you?
No, if it was me, it would have been said, Carrie the best.
Oh, Lord. Okay. And last but not least, and maybe the best, is Gina G from Pennsylvania.
If you want an episode shout out and all the good that they're getting every single week, including an extra episode a week, plus a letter, plus a sticker, plus, you know, just the whole damn backlog that is our Patreon, you got to head on to patreon.com/theAPC podcast. Sidebar, I just looked and it says, see all, 430.
Holy shit.
So there's a lot over there. So head on and check it out. So I was looking online today, shopping a little bit.
Ooh, at what?
Stuff for the cruise. Because they have themed nights. So we got to pick out our outfits.
Yeah, we are going to go all out.
Well, I don't know how all out we can go because nobody has some of the things I want in big girl sizes.
Oh, yeah, I feel that. If only my mama was alive.
Yeah, we'd spend $45 making a fucking tutu that we could have bought for $15.
It was some memories. Last night, I was on the computer, like, doing some stuff for the podcast. I was listening to Sinister Sightings, and while I was doing that, I was, like, kind of going over my story, and I was like, ooh, but I got, you know, email always gets me, and I got something from Torrid, and I was like, well, let me go on over there. So went over there, had some rewards from my birthday and stuff like that. So I was like, add these. Like, I have to spend it or it's going to go out. It will. I am one of those people. $20? I'm not letting that get away from me. So I spent way more.
I was going to say, so how much do you spend?
$100.
Donna!
But I got $40 off, so it would have been $140.
Okay, here's the flaw in your plan. It's still $100 more than you would have spent.
But I need, because, okay, so y'all, I've gained 30 pounds in the last 5 months. That's how my body loves me. But nothing fits me anymore besides leggings. So I had to have some stuff. I was like, because none of my stuff is business casual. So you're going to probably see more disco balls.
Okay. And that's what stress does to your body.
Yes.
Because I have been gaining some weight too.
Ugh. But, oh, what I was going to say is then went on Amazon and I had to purchase like some of my vitamins and stuff that I get. And I came out and I was like, I did this and this and this. And I was so productive. And I did online shop though too. Bye. And he's like, oh, Donna, why? Because I tell him, him being Chris, I want a budget. I want to do this. And then you leave me to my own devices and I shop. Though I will say I went to TJ Maxx because I haven't been there in forever and I did not spend a lot of money and I only got like 3 things.
What'd you get? If you say a coffee cup, Donna.
It was not a coffee cup.
If you say a tumbler.
It was not a tumbler.
Okay.
But I did buy my Hydro jug.
Okay.
It's coming in. Anyway, but it was on sale and there were croissant eye patches.
I can't believe for caffeine. This fucking bitch. I need a budget. I'm trying to get Birdie trained, but I also brought croissant eye patches.
They were $4.
Yeah, $4 times.
I need caffeine on my eyes. My eyes are puffy in the morning. And also, I might can talk with a French accent when I have them on.
God, thank God you have a boyfriend now.
And thank God he lets me be my weird, creepy self and laughs along with me.
Emphasis on the creepy. Well, speaking of trying to do a dang budget, have you tried to budget some life insurance in your life?
Well, you need to because you always need to be prepared.
Well, we know that if you're not prepared, somebody might be being prepared for you, because people do a lot of things for life insurance money.
Yeah, it shows up in true crime a lot more than you would think.
But that just highlights how valuable life insurance is. So that's why we're here to talk to you about SelectQuote, because this is how life insurance is done right. It's not shady, unlike Donna. It's not sketchy, unlike Donna. And it's definitely not complicated, unlike Donna.
But something like me, they've been around for nearly 40 years.
Something unlike Donna, they've helped over 2 million. But for real, they've helped over 2 million people find more than $700 billion with a B dollars in coverage.
And unlike some places that try to sell you the same overpriced one-size-fits-all plan, SelectQuote helps you find the right policy for your life, your budget, and your situation.
So whether your budget is unexpectedly spending $100 online shopping on a Wednesday afternoon, this will fit into your budget. And look, it doesn't take that long, but it like seriously only takes about 15 minutes. And a licensed agent walks you through it, and it's so easy.
Easy peasy lemon squeezy.
Like Donna.
And the price is shockingly affordable.
Some policies are less than a dollar a day. I mean, that's definitely less than what Donna spends on an impulse buy.
And unlike me, if you're in good health, some carriers can even get you same day coverage with no medical exam.
That's coming faster than Donna's random Wednesday night packages. So here's how to get started. Head to selectquote.com/creep. You're going to talk to a licensed agent who will help you find a policy that makes sense for your life.
Again, that's selectquote.com/creep.
You don't want to leave this stuff to chance. So whether you're single, married, have kids, or fur babies, this is how you make sure your people are protected. So head to selectquote.com/creep.
SelectQuote. They shop, you save. And you can spend it on other things. All right, picture it. Ashland, Kentucky, 1881. And if I say North Carolina through this, it's because Asheville, North Carolina comes in my head every time. I don't know why. Now, this is just a small river town along the Ohio River. And I probably should have saved this closer to Christmas, but I saw it and I had to do it. But it was happening right around Christmas. And it's called the Ashland Tragedy because for a long time, people said the victims never truly left. Now, it all started with the Gibbons family. Robert was 17, his sister Fanny was only 14, and their friend was 15. Her name is Emma Carrico. Now, she stayed the night. So kind of how me and Tiffany lived right by each other, that's how they were with Emma. And so Miss Gibbons, the mom, asked her to come over and stay while she took their youngest son across the river into Ohio to visit family. And I don't know why, really, because Robert was 17, but maybe she was just like, can you come and keep Fanny company? I don't know. But Emma was like, absolutely. And now their father, John, was away on business. So it was really just the three teens in the house. You know, they were likely staying up too late, laughing, talking about things kids in the 1800s cared about. I don't know. But it wasn't anything out of the ordinary. Carrie, what do you think is one thing that kids would be talking about at a slumber party in the 1800s?
Well, be more specific, 1800s.
1881.
Okay. Alexander Graham Bell.
The light bulb? You know they were still talking about boys, though.
Oh, 100%. I think they would say stuff like...
his mutton chops? Ugh.
Did they have mutton chops back then?
Oh, I have no idea.
I think that they would talk about the way someone milked a cow.
It was utterly... I was going to say delicious, and that's just weird.
Okay, that was the word that popped in my head, too, so maybe it just worked.
Oh, gosh. Okay. Well, we really know a lot of things about teens in the 1800s.
I don't know. I'm just trying to think of what Anne with an E would do. And so, you know, definitely you would have your different groups. You would have groups that were like way too cool and into books that they were like could have nothing to do with what these little people were talking about. And then you'd have the people that were like, oh my God, did you see what Betty wore to church? Her hem was 1 inch too short.
Hell, that's still now.
Touche.
Okay, well, Emma's mom, her name's Miss Thomas, she got up.
Sidebar, when somebody makes me call them Miss, it makes me want to do everything on the planet but call them Miss.
Who makes you call them?
It's just cultural. Sometimes people are like they'll introduce themselves, be like, I'm Miss Carrie. And I'm like, okay, Carrie.
Yeah, that's weird.
I really, like, it does something to me that just makes me have to revolt. Like, I know it's so ridiculous, but it's like a don't tell me what to do kind of thing. I hate it.
Well, I will say, okay, God, we are already off on tangents, but I will say I've noticed that I don't call the doctors who are more my age, like who are my peers, Dr. So-and-so. I'll call them by their first name, and I don't mean to because that is disrespectful, but they're like my peers. So in my head, that's okay. But like an older person, I would call Dr. So-and-so.
Yeah, I think too in the South, it's just like people want to be called Mr. and Mrs. And I just don't like it. I don't like doing it. You're not the boss of me.
Well, Miss Thomas was the boss of Emma. And that's why she was like, girl, get over there. I want a peaceful night. You go stay with Fanny and y'all make Robert, you know, roll his eyes, whatever y'all are talking about. Now, again, they lived right next door. So when Miss Thomas got up, it was before dawn. Oh, God, who is she? Colby. But to do some chores. And it was around 4 a.m. She glanced out and she saw that their house was still dark, the Gibbons house. And she's like, oh, you know, the kids probably did stay up too late. They're not up and about. Everything's fine, whatever. So she went on about her business, probably fucking milking a cow. And then around like 6:30, she noticed there was a strange flickering in the window. And so at first she was like, did I leave a lamp on? Because, you know, it's still like the actual like
kerosene. Yeah.
But then the realization hit, and so she ran outside screaming, fire, fire. This is when all the neighbors rushed out, and they were like, wait, is this just like something going on with the chimney? Like, did the kids put too much wood in there? What's going on? It was just like a chimney blaze. But when they got closer, it was clear that the Gibbons house was in flames. You know, Miss Thomas was yelling that Emma was in there, that it was just the kids. And so everyone was trying to save them. But finally, they were able to put the fire out and they found 3 bodies.
Oh.
And it was Robert, Fanny, and Emma. But they didn't die from the fire. They had been murdered.
Dun, dun, dun.
Their skulls were crushed. Their bodies were badly beaten. And the girls were assaulted. Now, the fire had been set to cover it up. And because of this, and I think really because of the fire too, because how dare you do this to them, but then take away their parents being able to say like goodbye and to like just kiss them one more time, any of that, the town reeled from this. And because it was a small town, suspicion spread fast. And who wasn't home? The mom, but she had the younger son with her and she was with family. So they were like, okay, it wasn't her. But the dad, John Gibbons, he was away on business and they went hard after him because I think the marriage wasn't so like perfect. So he had been like staying at a hotel before that. And so like, what if he did this to get back at the mom? Like, if I can't have him, no one can. I mean, we've seen that happen before. But there was a marshal, and he really believed that John Gibbons was innocent, and he worked really hard to clear his name, but they finally did because he was working. But that's when another name came up. And it was not someone whispering it. It was the guy himself admitting it. His name was George Ellis, and he was a bricklayer in town. And at first, like, mum was a word. He wasn't saying shit. But there was this store encounter where it made him nervous. And I don't know. It was just his guilty conscience. You know, like, the store owner probably, did I say it wrong?
Yes.
She started smiling. But, you know, he probably just said, like, how's your day? And he was like, well, I killed someone.
Right.
You know what I mean? And it's like, what? And he's like, I was real nervous. He was looking at me weird. You know, like, right. That kind of, it was just eating him up, which, good. But he just had that little nervous encounter. He did say that, like, he was like, I killed someone, and then left. So he was just kind of like wandering down the streets. And then he finally went to the marshal's door and confessed. And he said, it's not just me. I didn't do this by myself. Because that was one of the things they said about John Gibbons, is that there was no way that it was just one person who could do all of that. So George saying it wasn't just me, they were like, okay, this makes sense. Keep going. So he said him, William Neal, and Ellis Craft, they had been talking for weeks about the girls. And William and Ellis had really been like just egging on the conversation. And they started saying, like, well, before Christmas, like, we're going to have gifts of our own. We're going to give them gifts.
That's so disgusting.
Yeah. Now, on the night of December 23rd, just after midnight, the three of them went to the house. First, it was Ellis, and he pried open the window with an axe, crawled through, and that's when William came up behind him. And then George, the guy who confessed and is telling all of this, went in third. They said first, Robert, the 17-year-old, he tried to get up and he was kind of like in a hazy, like, what's going on? But that's when Ellis told him to stay. But when Robert was like, what the fuck? Like, who are you? Like, we don't even know you. That's when Ellis hit him with the axe, like struck him very, very hard. And he started to collapse under the stairs. And that's exactly where he was found later. George said that the girls knew Ellis and, like, they knew his name and was saying, no, please, Ellis, no. And Emma, the friend that was staying there, she tried to escape, but William grabbed her by the throat, dragged her to the floor, and then he struck her in the head with a crowbar. She died instantly, but Fanny struggled a lot against Ellis. And then Ellis also held her down. But George said, okay, I didn't rape them, but I did hold them down for Ellis and William to rape them. And also, Ellis assaulted her again after she was dead.
Oh, and I'm sorry. If you held somebody down, you are just as culpable as the person who actually raped them.
Absolutely. William is the one who was like, we need to burn this evidence, so we need to burn the house. And so they poured over coal oil all over the bodies and struck a match. And now I want Carrie to say coal oil.
You know what? Coal oil.
Coal oil. When I read that, I said, oh, we're going to get Carrie to say that. I feel like that really is kind of like your aisle. Coal oil.
I have to try really hard.
But okay, so the men were arrested, but the town wasn't having it. You know, they were like, yeah, justice might come, but it's not the justice that we want, that the family deserves. And there was a mob that stormed the jail. They pulled George from the jail and marched him over like he was crowd surfing, but not really.
Yeah.
And they lynched him from a sycamore tree. Now, William and Ellis, they actually went to trial and they had retrials, they appealed, you know, it was all the things. And that just pissed the people off more that they would try to appeal and they'd have to go through this whole thing all over again. But now George Ellis isn't around to testify against him or anything either. But in the end, both men were hanged. And through all of this hurt and all of the, you know, people were trying to actively kill them the entire time, the Gaston of it all, they were just hunting them every single time. They moved to a jail across town. They would try to, you know, get to him. And it just felt like that violence that they had really left the town cursed. And that's kind of when the paranormal side comes into this. So the old Gibbons house, which was burned down, they didn't rebuild. But people said that it wasn't all quiet on the Western Front. Neighbors still heard screams at night, and they really felt like that was residual energy from the children being trapped in the fire. Now, the house, like, it has some activity, like the grounds, I guess I should say. But what really has a lot of activity is the Ashland Cemetery. And that's where the three teenagers were buried, and they were buried together. They say that they hear cries, like disembodied cries, disembodied whispers. They say, especially around Christmas Eve, they could hear children crying and they can hear sometimes laughter, but mostly it's like the sadness and you get overwhelmed with sadness. You also feel like someone's watching you. And I didn't get this, but it said that one person said that a lullaby floated through the air and it was so quiet, you'd think you imagined it.
What?
And I said a lullaby?
Floated through the air? Like a song?
Yeah. And so I don't know what that means, but I said, okay.
You're like, I don't know what it means, but I'll tell you anyway.
Yeah. Other people at the cemetery say, like, when they're by the graves, they hear footsteps walking up behind them, but of course, no one's there. And they also see shadows that just like kind of stretch along the graveside. Flowers left on the grave were also found like scattered as if someone had trampled over them, which that probably wasn't paranormal. That was just an asshole. But right. People do avoid that part of the cemetery after dark, you know. The tragedy became kind of like folklore for the town because there were ballads that were written and sung in the Appalachian communities. Their names were carried out in the songs, and that kind of keeps their memory alive. But also the tragedy tainted the town to where those kids can't get rest anyway because people always bring that up.
Right.
And just because kids are kids, they're going to be like, well, if you want to be with us, you got to hang out in the cemetery. You
right.
got to touch the grave. From Fanny Gibbons, you know, that kind of thing. Now, the cemetery has another legend too, and it's called the Weeping Lady. The statue is carved of a woman leaning over two pots, and she's holding a rose. And that too has been linked to the phantom sobs and just like wailing, which the kids are crying, but she is like wailing, not to be confused. Used with an actual wail. Some say that they've seen the statue move or open her eyes and that her face changes as the day goes on. Others claim that they have seen a grieving woman by the statue only for her to disappear when she realizes that they can see her. So whether it's the spirits of Robert, Fanny, and Emma or something older that is in that cemetery, it has a reputation all of its own. But that is the Ashland tragedy.
That's the thing with these older stories like that. Well, to be honest with most of your stories, the shit at the beginning is so much fucking sadder and scarier and all the things than the actual, like, things that people encounter.
Right. I just feel so bad for them because they should have been able to be by themselves and not be scared. Like, because, hell, Robert was 17. So back in the day, he was basically an adult.
I'm surprised he wasn't married with three kids by now.
Right. And thank God that George Ellis had, loose lips. Because if not, who knows if it would have ever come out.
That's so true. And you know what? You'll actually kind of see that in my story, too.
Oh, shit. I love when our stuff goes together, like mm-hmm. some kind of little thread ties it together, because we never plan on it.
We couldn't plan that if we tried to make that part of the podcast.
I know.
Like, if we truly were like, okay, my story is going to be about, I don't know. Like, that was what the conversation would be. So what's your story about this week? Don't know. What's your story about this week? Don't know.
We get here and it's like, oh, mine's from blah, blah, blah. Me too.
Mm-hmm. Like how Taylor Swift can drop egg cartons, like,
egg cartons.
What's the word? Eggshells.
Eggs. Little Easter eggs.
Easter eggs. God damn.
She can drop those egg cartons.
I told y'all, I am so fucking foggy. Like, I know the word isn't right, but that's all that can come out.
I thought you were just, like, saying she dropped so many Easter eggs that they're an egg carton.
Fuck no, I couldn't think of the word. But because, like, how she can do that years in advance, I'm like, how do you know what you're even doing tomorrow?
I know. She really is a mastermind. But then I wish, like, not right now, but, like, forever in the future, if that day ever comes that she's, like, Adele and says goodbye or whatever, like, I just want to be like, what Easter eggs were true?
Yes.
And one was, like, because, you know, there are hardcore Swifties, and they'll be like, her hand was pointed up to the 2 o'clock, and then it was released over here. So I think that equals 13, which is her favorite number. So tomorrow she's going to tell it. But it always ends up being something. But it's like, is it just because, like, a happy accident, or because they pinpointed this? And so she's like, all right, let's drop it here then.
Look, Taylor Swift is amazing, but she is no Bob Ross. Do not put her in that happy accidents category. Well, before we get into my story, we have to talk about Beam. Because, look, sometimes you need a little break from the crimey crimes, because you are going, like, far too deep down the rabbit holes, and it's just too much sometimes, because it's messing with your sleep.
It really does, because you really can just kind of relive all the stuff that you heard, you watched throughout the day. And you finally get in bed exhausted, but then you're like, wait, what was that noise? Is something happening? Even though you know it's probably not, you're on edge because of all the stuff you've listened to, you've watched. And we all know that I have a hard time going to sleep. And I thought, you know what? It's just what it is.
But it's not just what it is, because that's where Beam comes in. Y'all been listening for a while. You know we've talked about it before. But Beam's Dream Powder has been a total game changer.
It's part of my nighttime routine now. Even when I travel, it comes with me. It's going to be on the cruise with me.
Beam's Dream Powder is this, like, yummy nighttime drink. It's, like, warm, cozy. It's like wrapping you in a blanket, like a pig in a blanket. And you are toasty, like you just came out of the oven. I don't know, I'm hungry. But it's made with this super powerful blend of, like, all natural ingredients like reishi, magnesium, L-theanine, apigenin, and melatonin. Because it's not just the melatonin you need. You need all that other crap, too.
It's all the good stuff that helps you fall asleep and actually stay asleep. And the best part, you wake up and you're feeling good. No grogginess, no weird fog, just energy and clarity.
You used to be in that loop of, like, bad sleep, coffee, crash, repeat. So with Beam, you can actually look forward to bedtime because it tastes so dang good.
And don't just believe us, because Beam has improved over 17.5 million nights of sleep for people across the country.
And how I was saying that it tastes so good, there's different flavors like chocolate,
caramel.
I mean, they're so freaking good, and you can either add it to warm water, warm milk, and just blow your way up like dawn on a Saturday night and fall asleep. And right now, Beam...
That's with the frother, y'all.
Yeah. Air quotes. Frother. So Beam is giving y'all an exclusive offer of up to 40% off their best-selling Dream Powder.
So if you are someone who's been struggling with sleep, whether it's stress, screen time, or your brain playing that whole true crime episode on repeat at midnight, Beams Dream is the fix. So you can get up to 40% off if you head to shopbeam.com/creep and use the code creep at checkout.
That's shopbeam, BEAM.com/creep and use the promo code creep at checkout for up to 40%.
I might not know a lot, but I know Beam's Dream Powder can help you solve the mystery of bad sleep.
Okay, so my story is a recommendation from Andrea TL in the email, but this one was in a long time ago, like 2020.
Andrea had nothing better to do than to send a recommendation.
No, it was January, so the world hadn't shut down
yet. Okay. Well, then she's probably been waiting patiently, being like, that bitch ain't had nothing else to do in 2020 than do this recommendation. And then skirt to 2025.
Right. Okay, so this story is actually I feel like I say that all the time. It's actually a fairly big story. It gets picked up by a podcast called Real Life, Real Crime by Woody Overton. And there are like multiple, like 18 episodes on this. So we're just going to do our best to cover everything to give you the majority of the story.
We met Woody at one of the festivals.
We sure did.
I'm friends with him on Facebook.
Okay. Have you seen those? It'll be like, go into an athlete or something and be like, who's your most famous person in your contacts?
Yes. He'd probably be mine.
Bitch, I'm friends with Aphrodite Jones on Facebook.
Oh, that's very true.
I mean, does she know who we are? Hell no. Is she friends with everybody? Hell yes. So all that to say, this is just a very small glimpse into this story that has a lot of info. Okay, so picture it. It's 2004. We're east of Houston in Winnie. Police get a call that someone has spotted a body. When they get there, it's a young woman who is nude from the waist down. She had on an LSU t-shirt that was pulled up around her neck, but she did still have her bra on. And there wasn't anything identifying who she was, except she had a class ring on. But they're like, this class ring is from a place in Louisiana. So like this could have been stolen because like she's in Texas.
But she had an LSU shirt on.
True. And then they look around the body and they do find some tire tracks around. And they can tell from this that this looks more like a dump site versus where this woman was killed. Because this was off of a road at a house that was abandoned. So it's like whoever put her here probably knew about this house and brought her here. And here's the thing, too, is that the location of the school where the class ring pointed to was Alexandria High School, which is like basically just across the border in Louisiana. It's actually not that far. And on the ring, they looked at it and it had a name. The name was Courtney Coco. The graduation date, 2003, which meant that whoever this ring belonged to had just graduated.
Same year as us.
I know. So they look up some stuff to see if there's a missing person for Courtney Coco, or was this stolen? They call the Alexandria Police Department and they look it up and they're like, well, there's not a missing persons for her, but we do have some burglaries in her name. Like, she had reported the burglaries that had happened at her house. So they're like, well, shit, okay, well, that could mean that someone stole her ring if she had had some burglaries. So the police get in touch with Stephanie, Courtney's mom. And Courtney's mom is like, what are y'all talking about? She's not missing. And they're like, well, I'm sure they tell her very gently, we found this body. You know, the body had your daughter's ring on it. You know, we just want to make sure she's okay. And she's like, no. Like, she's, again, the same thing that I had just told y'all. She had had some burglaries at her house. So somebody probably stole her ring. Stephanie, ends up trying to call Courtney. And she calls and she calls, and Courtney never answers the phone. So this is a huge red flag of maybe this is Courtney.
Could you imagine being like, no, my daughter is fine, and then being like, oh shit, she's not.
That moment of like just waiting and waiting and waiting for someone to pick up that you're worried something's wrong with them is like some of the scariest moments of your life. And to know that the police had just called you and you're trying to get in touch with them, it's like, that's so scary.
Yeah.
So Stephanie calls Courtney's sister, Lace, to be like, hey, you need to come over here. Like, I don't know what's going on. Like, have you talked to Courtney? And Lace is like, no, I haven't. And so she, calls her fiance, Anthony, and is like, Anthony, come pick me up. I got to go to my mom's house. But Anthony was taking too long, and so she was like, fuck that. I'll get another ride. So the police get there to talk to them, and they're like, okay, when was the last time you saw her? And they're like, just like 3 days ago. She came over. Stephanie and her husband were going to go camping, and they're like, you sure you don't want to come? And Courtney's like, hell no, I do glamping. I'm not going to freaking camp in the woods with y'all.
Feel that.
Actually, don't know if she said that, but she did tell them no. And then they realized that, no, they haven't talked to her since then. So one of Courtney's uncles is the one that actually goes to Texas to see if the body is Courtney's. And unfortunately, the body was that of Courtney. Now, this was on a Dateline episode, and the mom, Stephanie, was just talking about how, like, you don't want this to be anybody else's child, but you really don't want it to be yours.
Right.
I don't know. Something about those words kind of stuck with me.
This has no correlation, but in my brain, it's how when a hurricane is coming to us, but it's like it hits somewhere else and you're like, whoo. But then you're like, shit.
You're like wishing that. That's how I was too when, because my dad was an insurance adjuster. And like, if there wasn't storms, we didn't have money. And it was like you wish for a like an eventful hurricane season, but it's like you don't want anybody to have to go through that. But, you know, you have to have it so that he can go to work, you know?
Right. So, again, totally not on the same level of that.
Right.
But that's how it like worked in my brain.
So Courtney had a relatively normal childhood until she was 8 when her father died. And that was super hard for her. Like, she really came into probably too early an adult role. Like, I feel like this is one of those things where people, like, kids are, yeah, they say, like, parentification, but I want to be, like, adultification, even though I don't know that that's a word, but it's, like, when they have trauma and then they have to do adult things, because she helped plan her father's funeral, pick out the flowers, picked his burial plot, and then got herself one next to him. All this when she's 8.
Holy shit.
And so, you know, she really was super close to her dad. And this was really hard for her because, again, she was so close to him. But as she was growing up, she did okay. She was involved in sports. She, like, did pretty good in school. She had wanted to go to college for, like, criminal justice and stuff. And so while she had a hard time, she did okay until she kind of wasn't doing okay anymore. She really had started hanging out with people who were more into drugs. And I don't think she was doing like hard stuff. I mean, she was like drinking and smoking pot, but more of like the lifestyle where she wasn't being a very productive member of society. So back to what police found with her body, there really wasn't a lot to go on. Like, there were no indications of how she was murdered. Like, they put that she was murdered, but there was no bruising. There was no, like, ligature marks. There was nothing to indicate any, like, outward signs of a struggle or what caused the death. And then they ran toxicology reports, and there was nothing of note with that either. So it was like, okay, she didn't die of, like, an overdose, and then, you know, somebody panic and take her somewhere. So we know, like, it wasn't an overdose where somebody just dumped her body so that they wouldn't be connected to her overdose death. Even though she was found the way she was, there wasn't anything to indicate that she was sexually assaulted. So basically, they had a whole lot of nothing. And again, Alexandria is close, but it's not, like, that close. But they think that it's close enough that whoever dropped her chose this house, like, they knew something of the area. So the police go to Courtney's house to see if they could find something. And not really. Like, her jeans and her shoes were on the floor, which could be why she didn't have any pants on. Like, was she in bed? And, you know, it literally led to no more information. And, I mean, it was kind of messy, but, like, a 19-year-old messy, or, you know, a 40-year-old messy if you're me and Donna. You know, one of my coworkers said, actually two of them, said that they get so mad at their partners when they don't put their dish in the empty dishwasher. And I was like, I never have an empty dishwasher.
For real?
So you're telling me that there are people out there that wash their dishes and unload the dishwasher and just put things in as they use them?
I mean, I use my dryer like you use your dishwasher. Like, leave the clothes in there, tumble them right before you put them on, and go get the clean ones.
Yeah, I'm like, what?
Mm-mm.
Okay, anywho-sits. Now, they did find, like, the Dateline said cash box, but other things made it sound like a safe that was under her bed, and there was no indication that it had been broken into, but it seems like it was empty. I'm going to talk more about that later, because I saw this Reddit post that I was like, this thing makes a lot of good points. Well, the other thing is that Courtney's phone, wallet, car were all missing. So they were like, well, maybe it's a robbery. But then, like, going back to the house, they were like, this doesn't look like a robbery because there's no forced entry. Like, there's no, like, the doors were locked, everything's locked, and I don't know. Like, you could tell that people had been hanging out there. There was some, like, drinks and some dominoes, on, like the game, not the pizza, on the table. And so you could tell that, like, some people had had some drinks and played some dominoes the night before, and they had left their scorecards there, and it had a couple of names on it. Well, the long end of the short of that is that the people that whose names were on the scorecard, everything checked out. They had nothing to do with Courtney's murder. So they go back to, okay, well, Courtney had had a couple of burglaries before her murder. So was this tied to it? Her mom is like, okay, I actually think that the burglaries were her ex-roommate, because she had this roommate that they had gotten into a little kerfuffle, and she had kicked her out, and the roommate was pissed and had threatened to cut her guts out.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
Yeah. Well, so they're like, we think that the roommate still had a key that was coming in and stealing all this stuff, because, I mean, who else would it be? Because, again, there was no signs of forced entry, even for the robberies. So the police knock, knock, knock on the ex-roommate's door, and it ain't her either. So they're like, okay, well, Courtney had been, like I said, hanging out with people that were, you know, selling pot, that kind of thing. Because, again, y'all remember, it's 2004, right? So they're like, okay, these people smoke the devil's lettuce. Because Donna, I know what that is now.
Uh-huh.
So they start looking into, like, the people that Courtney hung out with. And she had this boyfriend. He went by, like, Jitty or Giddy or something. Jiffy. I can't remember what it was. Dumb is what it was. But they had some issues where he was kind of abusive, they think, allegedly, because nothing was ever proven with that. And her friends were like, you probably should start with him. Well, they did. And ended up, it wasn't him either.
Well, like, who the fuck is it then?
Exactly. Now, there was a lot of back and forth with the family, with the police department. Like, the family did not like the sergeant that was in charge. So the family kind of did their own investigation, and they would call with all of these leads, which is, you know, you would think helpful. But on the other hand, I think the police department felt like the family was sending them on these wild goose chases, not intentionally, but it was hindering their investigation, because anytime Joe Schmo would tell them something, then the, you know, it just, which that's, I also feel like, well, we're just explaining how a police investigation works, because isn't that what it all is until those random tips are actually something? But the police felt like they were getting in the way. They felt like the police weren't handling this the way that they should, and that they weren't giving her case the attention that she needed or that it deserved, because she hung out with unsavory people.
Right.
So cut to the family, you know, having to bury their daughter, which is freaking awful. And the mom, the sister Lace, the sister's fiance, Anthony, they all went to like where her body was found in Texas, and they like put up a cross, and you know, they had the funeral, and like the fiance's, the pallbearer, you know, just the whole thing. So police get finally kind of a good lead. They saw that basically Courtney's phone had stopped working that Saturday morning at about 4:30 in the morning. And then they realized that after her body was found, that her phone started working again and started calling a bunch of Houston numbers. And so they're like, holy shit, here's our first break.
Thank God.
Well.
Oh, shit.
The phone was on a 15-year-old. And this 15-year-old doesn't know who Courtney is, what happened to Courtney. But he said that there were these two guys walking down the street. And they were like, you want a phone for $10? And he was like, sure do.
The thing is that they made money off of a dead person's phone and gave it away, like.
Yep.
And got, you know what I mean? It's like, they fucking made money. They didn't even just give it away. They made money. They sold it.
Yep. So the kid gives them a description. And then they ended up finding Courtney's car outside of this apartment complex in Houston. And so they're like, okay, does this have anything in it? There was allegedly two guys that drove Courtney's car. Somebody had said that one of them's nickname was Red. But I'm going to be honest, I never really saw much about who this Red person was. But remind me to come back to this, because, insert Reddit thread. The car wasn't much help. They tested some of the cigarette butts that were in the car. They did luminol. They found a little bit of blood on the trunk latch. But again, there wasn't much to help them. So time starts passing. And like I said, this is also like, we're getting a year after the murder. And this is where things really start taking a turn for the family and the police, because they're just not jiving. And then when all hell broke loose was when the police, specifically this one Sergeant Green, got an anonymous call that said, follow the money.
What money?
Exactly. Well, ended up, it actually was Courtney's grandfather that called in the follow the money tip.
Oh, okay, okay. I was like, wait, you just told us who it was? But no, okay, no. Okay.
But okay, follow the money. The money was because Courtney's dad had been hurt on the job. He got this huge settlement because he lost his leg because of this injury. And when he died, Courtney, as his beneficiary, continued to get this money. And the money, like, doubled every 5 years. So basically, she got a $1,500 check every month. And that she had just received a big lump sum payment of $20,000.
Holy shit.
Right. So the police are like, what the fuck is this money? What are you talking about money? What do you mean? Why did Stephanie, her mom, not tell us about this money?
Uh-huh.
Because guess who gets the money now?
Her mama.
Her mama. And the mom's like, well, I didn't even think to tell you because I didn't even know I was the one that was going to be getting it, you know, blah, 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 blah. So the police are like, we want a polygraph with you. So she does all the things. She submits her DNA. She takes a polygraph. She's completely cooperative. But then they do the same thing for her sister, Lace. Now, Lace is not as cooperative as her mom. But I'm also like, why does Courtney get the money and not Lace? Did she and Lace not have the same dad, I wonder?
Maybe not.
Because that's weird. And also, why didn't like, were her parents not married still? Because why wouldn't it have gone to her mom? And then also, if, like, what grandpa was it? You know, like.
Very true.
I don't know. But, I mean, I guess the daughter would be the next of kin before the grandfather. But, like, I don't know. That's weird to me. But anyway, so they call Lace in, and she's not as cooperative. Like, she gets super pissed off when they tell her that they want a polygraph. And then when they start asking her questions about, like, did you murder her? She gets pissed and she leaves. And they're like, if you don't come back tomorrow to do this, like, we're going to think that you're guilty. And so she ends up coming back the next day and taking the polygraph. But, you know, when you talk to her about it, she's like, yeah, I had been there like 6 or 7 hours of them interrogating me. I was tired. Her mom ends up saying, like, she didn't have her seizure medicine and all this stuff. And so she was like, yeah, I left. I was pissed. I'm pissed at the police that they're not doing anything. I'm pissed that they're asking me these questions. So, yeah, I got mad and I left, but she did come back. Well, after the family had kind of had the long arm of the law laid on them while they were being interrogated and stuff, that's when they were like, we don't want these investigators on it anymore. So they were removed. And other people were put on. But this case is getting cold. And I mean, very cold. Like, it was even featured on Dateline's Cold Case Spotlight series that they do on Facebook. Because we're talking 10 years and still no answers.
Did you say 10 years?
Yes. So the family's like, we got to fucking do something. Because it's 10 years. This case is cold as shit. They aren't getting along with the Alexandria police. They felt like they're not getting any help from the Texas Rangers and all anymore. And so they're like, you know what? Let's ask the Sheriff's Department. Because that's like the organization that, I guess, hasn't helped them yet.
Well, if Walker Texas Ranger was the real person, he would have.
Well, the Rangers were already involved.
I know, but if Walker...
Okay. It is your dad's birthday, so I'm going to give you that.
Thank you.
He did love Texas Rangers.
He did.
Walker Texas Rangers, specifically. So, the family calls the Sheriff's Department, and they're like, cool. Yeah, so there was another vial of her blood, so we ran the toxicology report, and we think that she was not murdered, and we think that she overdosed. And the family's like, what? The first autopsy said there was, like, no signs of drugs and alcohol. Like, what are you talking about? And they're like, okay, never mind that. Even if she did, she didn't drive herself from Louisiana into Texas and dump her own body, sell her phone, and dump her car.
Right.
So even if, I want to know, and I'm not going to stop until we find out who did that to her. So this is when the family's like, you know what? Fuck this shit. We're not doing this anymore. And they decide that they're going to hire a private investigator. So bring in Woody Overton. So he was an investigator with the Louisiana State Police for 20 years. Like Donna said, fancies himself a cowboy, has a really good voice for podcasting. Like, you just think he's
really
law enforcement. But his podcast is called Real Life, Real Crime. So he takes his case on. Oh, Woody Wood did not mince words when it came to how he felt that the police did their investigation. And he even says, like, look, I'm armchair quarterbacking over here. But he didn't like the way that the case had been run. And he got all of the information from the family because they had been keeping all the receipts. They had every tip, everything that had ever been given to them. So they turned all that over to Woody. So Woody is like bringing her up on the podcast, like the listeners are getting involved, and he gets a call from one of the listeners saying, like, so my ex-husband knows who did it. She said, one night my ex-husband comes home smelling like death.
What?
Mm-hmm. And that, like, made him shower before he could even come to bed, and that he had said that his friend did it. So Woody's like, hey, can you get this shit on recording? And she said, like all the kids do, bet. So the girl's ex-husband's name is Seamus Setleaf. I guess is how you pronounce it.
But it's red?
No.
Ah, damn it.
So Woody's like, girl, can you call him and get him to talk about this case? And like I said she could. And so she does. And he says that the person who murdered Courtney was Anthony Burns, Lace's fiance. The guy who had been the pallbearer, the guy who hand painted the cross for her fucking memorial site, Anthony Burns.
What the actual fuck? Because Lace would get the money. No, he thought Lace would get the money.
Hold on to your hat, sister.
Oh, he didn't know the family tree either.
So the family, because Woody takes us to the family, and the family is like, what? Lace has been sleeping with the killer. Like, holy fuck.
Literally, that movie from Tori Spelling, Mother May I Sleep with Danger.
So he gives this information over to police. And he, look, Woody even talks about how, like, the fans were pissed that he gave this information to the Alexandria Police Department because he had been so vocal and how he felt like they had done such a shitty job. But he's like, I mean, what's he going to do at this point, you know? So the police get this information and they start going back from square one and they question Seamus, and he was like, yep, he did it. And they realized that years before, like when this all went off, all this happened, two people had said that Anthony did it and that he had confessed to them. But one of them had a criminal record, and the other one said that Anthony Burns was drunk when he confessed. So, like, oh, okay, then that means I guess there's no way he would have done it.
Like, what? Two people mentioned his name?
Yep. So then they start going through some documents, and they realize that there was this guy who had said a couple of days after Courtney's body was found, he said that he had seen the green Pontiac when she would have been murdered and her body dumped, and that he had called and been like, hey, I saw that car. Like, it literally almost ran me over. Like, we almost had a wreck, and it was right by the dump site. And that, like, this is what I saw. This is, you know, this is everything. And it's like, now they're going back and seeing all this stuff. The person did get a look at the driver. It wasn't a perfect eyewitness as far as like what they saw, because it was kind of, I think, more of like a silhouette. But when they were given like pictures, they picked Anthony Burns out of that lineup.
Are you saying that they saw a little silhouette of a man?
Scottagamoosh.
Oh, Lord.
So in October of 2019, they bring Anthony Burns in to question him. And they're like, tell me about the weekend that Courtney was murdered. And he goes into this whole thing about how he and Lace had this great weekend at home, flowers, romantic, blah, 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 blah. Well, they ask Lace, and she's like, hell no, we fought all weekend. We got in a huge fight. She said that the next time she had seen him was after Courtney's body had been found. But here's the thing, too, though, that Lace left out. She said that not long before Courtney had been murdered, that she had called Anthony and heard Courtney's voice in the background being like, who is that? And so she thought that Anthony and Courtney were having an affair.
Holy shit, this is juicy.
Furthermore, she says Anthony had gotten two gold promise rings, and that basically one was like nicer of the two. It seems like maybe they were a pair. Like, picture like friendship rings, where that together they make a heart. And then like half of one is like the better of the heart and the other one's like just like a hole.
Really? You know what I'm talking about? The only one who would think one's better than the other, but yes.
But you know, what I'm saying though? Like, one like looks like a heart and one looks like just like the piece is missing, yeah. You know? Basically, he gave her the heart, gave Courtney the heart, and gave Lace the other one.
Ooh.
Yes.
But that's weird as fuck.
Right. So he gets indicted and they bring in this super fancy DA to try to get this conviction. So basically, in court, they had to prove that it was a murder, not an overdose. And they brought Seamus on the stand. They had to treat him like a hostile witness because he did not want to be there. But he had to testify for the prosecution because they literally had tape of him being like, yeah, my friend did it. And the long of the short of it is that they ended up convicting him. He was found guilty of second-degree murder. He was sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole. But, okay, let me just tell you. So I read there, this person's name is like Judge Cover by the Book. And they said like, hey, I just watched the Dateline that covered the Courtney Coco murder. Was her sister Lace involved? Allegedly, don't sue us.
Ooh.
So they say that like they can't shake this feeling that Lace was involved. Because why didn't she tell the cops that she suspected Burns, Anthony, you know, the guy, of having a romantic relationship with Courtney? And it like, it just seems like it was never brought to anybody's attention. And then she says Courtney's getting the payouts from her father's death. She had a $20,000 payment shortly before her murder. Basically, like, I'm sure her sister knew that. So why wasn't the empty safe more of a focus?
Ooh.
Because remember, I told you, yeah, like, that was missing. Yeah. And it's like, all these robberies with somebody that had, like, a key and all of that. And then they go on to talk about, too, like, who was Red? Like, was it Anthony Burns who was nicknamed Red? And if he was that nickname, like, wouldn't Lace have known that was his nickname?
Very true.
And then even if it was Seamus that was nicknamed Red, like, wouldn't Lace have known that? And then they said, because I didn't hear this on the whole recording, but they said that on the recording, Seamus says, quote, Lace and Anthony did it. They did it for the money. Her body was black waist up. I don't know what that means. He just kept saying Lace and Anthony did it. They'll be shocked when they find out who did it.
Holy fuck.
So.
But why wouldn't Anthony turn on Lace?
Why though? Oh, true. You know later. What I mean? Yeah, like, yeah, yeah.
If I'm going down for this, you are too, bitch.
I think people do one of two things when they're kind of caught up in something. One, they minimize their participation so that it doesn't seem like they did as much as they did. So maybe she tried to minimize like what she knew with, you know, Anthony of it all.
Yeah.
But then the other thing I think that people do when they're caught is they will tell you a bit of truth to paint themselves in a poor light, because if you're telling them that, then that must be the whole truth.
Right.
So it's like, okay, let's just take burglary and murder. Well, I robbed them, but I didn't murder them, you know?
Yeah.
Because like, why would you admit to the robbery kind of thing? And so I don't know. I don't know that Lace had anything to do with it, but I do think that there are some serious red flags in this case that we never heard. And like, what, the fact that all of the witnesses in Texas said there were two people.
Very true.
But they also said two guys.
Yeah, so, I was going to say that guy had Seamus, said.
Yeah, like, so how much, and then the fact that his ex-wife said he smelled like death. Like, so did he help her dispose of the body? Did he get some sort of immunity for this? But like, why don't we know that he got some sort of immunity? You right. know, so it's like, allegedly, maybe. It's weird that all the witnesses said two men when, like, how does Seamus know what he knows?
Right.
No, I don't know, but that's the story.
Oh.
I feel like there's a lot of, I want to say hanging chads, because that says nothing to do with it. But, you know, like, I don't even know what that means, but that's just what I want to call it. But, like, I just feel like there's a lot of outliers to this story that we don't have the answers to, of, like, well, again, why did her sister not tell that she thought that they were having an affair? Like, why, you know, why did no one follow through with the witnesses? Why did, like, or the people who said that, hey, you know, 15 years ago, Anthony said that he committed this murder.
Right.
And he, I don't know. There's just a lot of questions around.
Uh-huh. But, I mean, they're good points about Lace, allegedly.
Mm-hmm.
Just of the leaving out the affair thing. If she heard Courtney's voice, like, why did she not say he was with her at some point during that weekend or whatever, when the last time she was seen? Like, that would be something to be said.
Yeah, that would be like my first, yeah, hey, this motherfucker, I think he was having an affair with her.
Right.
Check him out. But then maybe she didn't, because she felt like that would make her look guilty, you know, if she because now she has a motive.
But it's like, if she would have told him that, maybe they could have ran his cell data. Because, you know, a lot of times people will turn off the victim's phone, but not turn off theirs or whatever.
I was thinking that, too. I was like, there has to be more cell phone data, but it was 2004, so maybe not.
Yeah. I don't think I had a cell phone. No, I didn't have a cell phone until, well, probably 2003. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But like.
But there also wasn't a lot of messages that could be done unless you were rich, because those cost. But still, you would be able to know, like, if they did send messages that were more than just friends or, I don't know. That just seems real weird that that wasn't brought up until way later. And were they still together?
Right. I mean, I don't know. I don't know at what point they broke up, because they did break up at some point. But he was involved enough that he was one of the pallbearers and, you know, helped them, like, do the cross for her little memorial at that place, you know. So it's like, I don't know. And like most of the websites that had any information on this, it would be like on the Dateline, on the Dateline, on the Dateline. So that was really where you get the bulk of the information.
Yeah.
Like even like an, like they just all would tag back to the Dateline.
Well, this is what sucks too, is that Courtney's death is overshadowed by the whole, like, it took decades to find her killer. It turned out to be her sister's boyfriend when...
Fiance.
Fiance. You know, and then, oh, they might have been having an affair. Oh, they might have done this. You know, I don't know. It's just like, it gets overshadowed by the whole, like, fiasco after.
And what if she really wasn't? Like, where is said old promise ring?
Yeah.
You know, like... What if it really wasn't that? And like, how does her sister know about the promise ring if she just had an inkling that they were, you know, like.
Right. And then I'm like, what if it wasn't a promise ring and he really did give them like sisters to the end kind of rings? And she is like you. And she's like, he gave her the better one.
Well, but also, where's the $20,000?
That's very true.
The first tip was follow the money. Where's the $20,000? There has to be a trace of that. Like, there has to have been. Like, if she just had it in cash, then it's missing from the house. If she had it in the bank, well, then we know. You know what I mean?
Right.
But if she had it in cash in the house, and then that money box / safe thing was empty, well, then that's a red flag. Because how they know about that money? They'd have to be close enough to know about the money.
Mm-hmm. You know what the money box reminds me of?
Your mama?
Yeah.
I have that. It's in my pantry.
Yeah, because we had our last yard sale here.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Lord.
Well, thank you for the recommendation, and thank you all so much for listening. Again, we know we talked about Patreon and the cruise and all of that, and we know that in this economy, not everybody can do that, and we totally understand. But there are plenty of ways that you can support us. Otherwise, you can follow us on social media at the APC Podcast. You can like, subscribe, review all the things, and most importantly, remember...
Creep it real
and don't get scared.